Hello and welcome to the Doorstops podcast. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and I would like to introduce you all to my guest today, Dr. Allison Goebel. Dr. Goebel is the executive director of the Great Ohio Policy Center, and she has been with them since 2010. Allison is responsible for charting the Great Ohio Policy Center strategic direction, directing research, advocacy, and outreach teams, and securing resources for this work. She is the author of a number of research reports and policy briefs related to the revitalization of weak markets, legacy cities, transportation funding, and local governance structures in Ohio. Allison is a graduate and board member of Leadership Ohio and was elected by her class for the 2014 Leader Among Leaders Award. She holds a PhD and MA in anthropology from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and received her BA from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. So I want to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And so can you tell us a little bit about the Great Ohio Policy Center?
Sure. So we are a statewide nonprofit with a mission to improve the communities of Ohio through smart growth strategies and research. And our vision is a revitalized Ohio. So the way that we do that work day to day, we undertake original research, we facilitate peer learning across the state with communities and leaders in those communities, and we advocate for state policies that will help Ohio's communities stabilize and thrive. We are a nonprofit organization. I have a bipartisan staff and board, so that keeps us very data-driven and focused on pragmatic solutions for Ohio's communities.
And so what kind of makes the Greater Ohio Policy Center unique?
Yeah, I mean, so as I mentioned, we're bipartisan, which tends to land us in moderate centrist positions. We tend to advocate for incremental change instead of huge policy shifts, which often don't occur. We are also the only think tank in Ohio focused on land use, legacy cities, legacy town issues, redevelopment policies. So there's a number of our other, quote, think tanks around. We like to think of ourselves as a think and do tank in the sense that we are providing a lot of support to local communities through the research that we do and the strategies that we're sharing. But yeah, I think that land use focus and the legacy city questions is fairly unique to us.
And so what are some of the biggest challenges that you guys face as an organization?
Yeah, well, so we're data-driven, so that means policy development can take time. We don't have a membership, but we have a lot of constituents and stakeholders. And, you know, Ohio's a diverse state, which means our stakeholders are very diverse, which also means that, you know, it takes time to build consensus among stakeholders. The other thing, too, just more broadly, so the issues that we focus on include, like I said, legacy city revitalization, state funding for public transportation, brownfields remediation, neighborhood stabilization, which includes housing issues. All of these issues are the result of several, at least in Ohio, all these issues have faced several decades of disinvestment, which means that the declining tax rolls over the last 20 years due to factory closures or 20 years of minimal state investments in transit means that these issues now are pretty complicated, complex, multi-layered. And as a result, the policy solutions and local strategies that are going to rectify these challenges are going to just, first, take time. Two, they're not simple. And three, you know, it's not a silver bullet approach. Silver buckshot, we like to say.
And so you mentioned kind of some of the work that you're doing, which is transportation focused. And so I think that that's going to be the focus of this episode, is looking at kind of the connection between affordable housing and transportation. And so for most households, transportation is really considered the second largest expense after housing, especially for low-income households. And so what are some effects of having limited transportation options for these households?
Yeah. I mean, I think many of your listeners know these challenges. Limited mobility options mean that where wage earners might work is narrow to the places that they can access. Limited transportation means that doctor's appointments get missed, families struggle to get food, especially healthy food. Kids who aren't bused by their school districts might miss school because they always can't always get a ride or easily get to school. For low-income families with personal vehicles, their lives are often just one broken brake line or a failed transmission away from becoming extremely unstable. And then the families without vehicles, you know, are depending on the generosity of their neighbors or resorting to fairly expensive solutions, taxis, ride-sharing companies. So it's important to be mobile in today's society to access job opportunities, amenities, you know, key services. And without those, without that connection to get there, it just becomes very, very challenging in what is already a very challenging situation for most families.
And so what are some things organizations or communities can do to really improve access to transportation?
So the easy, not easy solution is better land use policy. Place new development, whether that's housing or job centers, in existing transportation systems. So especially in our urban settings, best is to place new development along existing transit lines, what urban planners call transit-oriented development. We love the example in Cleveland of Aspen Place, which is a fairly new affordable housing development that's located immediately adjacent to the West 65th Street Rapid Station. And the developer, which is the local CDC up there, has negotiated transit passes for its residents. So residents are very close to the Rapid. They're close to other bus lines. This particular neighborhood can easily access downtown, which is a major job hub, and is located in one of the fastest kind of revitalizing neighborhoods in the city, so there's jobs there. So we love Aspen Place just as an example of being really thoughtful about how development and transit should be mutually beneficial and linking up with each other. Not all communities, of course, though, in Ohio have a fixed route transit system. So the second best sort of solution, particularly for those places without a fixed route transit system, is to place new development along existing corridors where development already exists. And ideally, these corridors have smooth and safe sidewalks. They're walkable to other destinations, whether that's residential neighborhoods, schools, and green space, commercial centers where jobs, groceries, clinics can be accessed. You know, this is the ideal.
Right.
But in Ohio, we're still sort of struggling with land use policy in Ohio is fairly agnostic, and communities are fairly agnostic about where development goes. And so as a result, it often goes into green fields, whether that's a new distribution center that might need a lot of workers or new housing developments that then are, you know, too far away to really get to anything that, again, that you need to access in your daily life. So given that there isn't much appetite among economic development professionals in Ohio to exclusively do infill development, there are a lot of other partners who are kind of stepping into that space to overcome the mismatch between where people live and where they need to go. And that's, we're aware of a number of employers in Ohio who now basically are providing their own private transportation to their employees. Hospitals, there's a hospital system down in Southeast Ohio that serves actually Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia, and the hospital system is now providing rides to patients to ensure that they're getting to doctor's appointments. We just think, you know, these are certainly solutions, but maybe not the right ones when you have to kind of rely on non-traditional partners to provide those mobility solutions that are currently lacking in the market.
Can you kind of talk more about like the land use policy? And like, I assume that this is kind of going more into like the zoning aspect as well, that it's just like, I mean, a lot of cities throughout the country are kind of looking at getting rid of single family zoning. Do you think that this would help in a sense with transportation, that it's just like if we're increasing density, then there would be more riders available for the transit? Would this encourage transit-oriented development in those areas?
That would certainly help. In Ohio, a lot of the land that would be ideal for redevelopment is dirty. It's environmentally contaminated. And so Ohio used to have a program to remediate brownfields. It was a grant program, highly successful. That has gone away, and as a result, redevelopment of the factory right next to downtown, like these factories are not getting cleaned up and, you know, whole new neighborhoods being built. So the issue of just making sure that the land that is available is shovel ready is a huge issue. Yes, zoning is also an issue, but also just more broadly, green fields are really attractive right now to economic development officials. They feel easy, right? You're like, clean slate, but the costs of running out new sewer, water, utilities, you know, those costs then are absorbed by the existing municipality and its ratepayers, its taxpayers, and those costs become burdensome over time, but that hasn't really stopped this particular kind of development pattern from continuing to occur.
Right, because it's just like, where are these greenfield developments? And it's just like they're on the outer sides of the city.
Right.
And it's just like you're just expanding everything. And
right.
So then it's just like, well, then those are even more transit routes that you're going to need to expand all the way out there.
Right. And we know from a number of the public transportation systems around the state that they're not consulted until basically the ink is drying on the deal that's going to locate the new, like I said, distribution center, or, you know, maybe it's a higher wage player, but they're not really consulted till kind of the end. And so, and it's like, well, you can run a line out here, right? And it's really expensive to provide public transportation. Not really expensive, but it's not like these transit systems have a lot of extra cash floating around. And getting employers to these job locations, you know, it's not just like moving people 1 mile or 2 miles. Like, we're talking about pretty far distance with not very intuitive sort of connection points between where workers are concentrated in terms of where they're living and where they need to go during the day or night shift to work.
And so we're kind of getting into it, but what are some of the risks Ohio communities are facing of not really investing in transportation options for all the residents?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, and we're sort of kind of ignoring what those challenges are. And, you know, it's across the board. So if we're not investing in our transportation systems, well, whether that's public transit or another mobility solution, you know, we're limiting the number of people who could get off the sidelines and work because they may not necessarily be able to get to the employment location. It's, you know, questions about health and how healthy Ohioans are. It depends on how they can get to doctor's offices and doctor's appointments. In rural Ohio, you know, where the opiate crisis is especially acute, methadone treatment clinics are a proven way to manage opiate addiction. But, you know, if you have to drive more than an hour one way each day to go get your treatment, like, what's the success rate there? That's a question. There's parts of Ohio where it's over 90 minutes to drive to the closest obstetrician or cancer specialist. So again, we're sort of putting Ohioans at risk in terms of health. But then again, from the economic development question, which is really where a lot of our work lies, we know that employers of today are looking for top talent, and that top talent wants mobility options, right? They want transportation options. And so by not supplying those transportation options, Ohio becomes less competitive to any new business that may be wanting to locate to Ohio, or existing businesses who are considering, you know, is this the right talent pool that I want, or should I move elsewhere where the amenities are such that I'm likely to find an existing talent pool without having to create one? So yeah, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of different kind of fallout from the fact that we are not sufficiently investing in all transportation options in Ohio right now.
And so can you talk a little bit about the Fund for Economic Futures work?
Yeah, so, you know, those folks are great. You should go talk to them. We are really impressed by what they're doing. So the Fund for Economic Futures is a economic development intermediary research organization based in Northeast Ohio, and they're supporting the Northeast Ohio community's work to become more economically competitive. But they're doing this in a very, very interesting and thoughtful way. So they've been doing a lot of research around job hubs. And what that is, in short, basically locations where high-paying jobs are located and concentrated, which could be accessible to a range of workers with skills. And the high economists who are listening, they're focused really on the traded sector jobs, basically jobs that create stuff, right? So there's new value being created. So they say at the fund, how can we align transportation investments with the locations of these job hubs? And how can we encourage future employers who might become those new job hubs to locate where transportation is already existing? So they right now have a competition going on called the Paradox Prize, which is funding pilot projects that are working to overcome the job transportation question, right? Like no car, no job, no car, and how to overcome this paradox. I think it's great work just because it's really crystallizing the results of not sufficiently considering transportation when we are making economic development decisions and when we're making business attraction decisions. Like, it is really bringing to light how much Ohio is losing because we are not sufficiently supporting both sides of that equation.
And so do you think that this is really going to be guiding residential development or business development throughout the state?
I mean, that's their hope, particularly around business development, but, you know, presumably, like, this tool could easily be utilized for residential development. Their hope is that, yes, that this becomes a resource for development professionals to consult as they and, you know, all the other parties that are involved with making development decisions start, you know, working on new projects. If that's actually going to happen is, you know, I think an open question, but it's certainly, what I like is that what we're talking about, what we have up until this point talked about in fairly abstract terms, like, they are able to provide hard numbers with, you know, lost revenues as a result of these current planning decisions. And, you know, in the future, I think are planning to demonstrate what are the possibilities with more thoughtful development that's tied to these existing job hubs.
Earlier in the episode, you were kind of talking about new ride-sharing modes of transportation coming into play. And so how do you think these new technologies like bike sharing, car sharing, ride sharing, scooter sharing, and the like will really affect the relationship between affordability and place?
I hope emerging mobility solutions can help overcome this transportation paradox. Right now, these solutions are not economical for low-income Ohioans unless they're subsidized. One. Two, I think right now a lot of folks in the transportation world see these as, you know, disruptive technologies that are really going to serve as a silver bullet solution. I think they're going to help with last mile issues potentially, meaning, you know, sort of if you're on a major route or you're getting a ride, but that last half mile or whatever to your home or final destination, like, I think they can help overcome that potentially. But, you know, people who have young children are not going to be using scooters. elderly people are not going to be using bike share, likely. I just think that it assumes you are an able-bodied, unencumbered by children or groceries or, you know, other materials. And so these solutions, I think, are important, but they're not going to be like the end all be all. I think that I don't want to diminish them, but I just want to be really cognizant that they can't substitute in for what has been a proven route to prosperity, which is investments in public transportation can help a lot of people at a much lower per person cost than necessarily a scooter, you know, scooter sharing or ride sharing system.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that you're kind of getting into it, but really looking at this as an equity standpoint, that it's just like not everyone is able to use these technologies, nor is it really accessible or affordable for all populations. I mean, even looking around in Columbus, like looking at people that are riding these scooters around, a lot of times they're, I don't know, young 20s, and it's just like, you're not seeing a lot of different populations using them. It's really one demographic.
Yeah. I mean, I think done right with active shaping, either through policy or sustained conversations with the providers who are providing these mobility solutions, like, I think they can promote equity, but alternative modes of transportation, any mode of transportation, like, in and of itself is not wired to promote equity, and particularly these private market companies, while they have interest in promoting equity, we know that equity doesn't just happen, right? It hasn't happened so far, right, without a lot of active work by a lot of different people. So I think these technologies have that possibility, but we can't just turn them loose on the market and expect them to sort of be the equity solution or a solution to equitable, inclusive development. Like, we really have to make sure that there's some guidance there that's pushing these solutions to provide that kind of equity.
And so what populations do you really think are hurting most from these alternative modes of transportation?
Well, I mean, I think, like we talked about, I think there's a lot of people who are left behind because they are not in a position to use these technologies. So, again, parents with small children, like, have you lugged a baby carriage lately or, like, a car seat?
No.
Yeah, I mean, those things are heavy, right? Like, you can barely wrestle them onto a bus, much less, like, onto a bike, back of a bike. So I think parents are really going to struggle with that, or other caregivers. Again, people who with physical disabilities, elderly people. I mean, I just think that these solutions, not, you know, ride sharing is a possibility. Again, it has to be subsidized in order to make it affordable. So, you know, it's a hard nut to crack, and I don't want to dampen the market on these mobility solutions. There just needs, I think, to be an honest recognition that, like, there's still more work to be done to reach our really vulnerable populations.
And so speaking to that, it's just like, what can communities really do to make things accessible and affordable for people of all incomes?
Public transportation, like riding buses, is a proven solution, right? Whether that's fixed route or dial ride, like, that will get people to where they need to go at a price point that is much more economical per person than maybe other technologies. Also, public transportation, of course, has, you know, all sorts of environmental and climate change benefits as well, right? So, like, you know, we haven't talked about that, but there's, you know, we need to recognize that climate change is happening, and that without thoughtfully anticipating those impacts, like, any sort of development is sort of, we don't know exactly what would happen to that development, right, in the future. Making sure that roads are safe for all users. So that might mean putting in sidewalks, bike lanes, curb cuts to ensure that they're ADA accessible. Making sure that there's sufficient lighting. Making sure that in places where there's lots of pedestrians, traffic is calmed so that if there is a collision between a pedestrian and a car, you know, the car's not going at 50 miles per hour, right? Like, there's just some really basic design things that can happen at the local level that would really help reduce the number of fatalities and serious injuries to bicyclists and pedestrians, but then also increased safety means that more people are going to feel comfortable using these particular infrastructures. So those are, again, this is not going to solve the question of if your job is located 5 miles outside of the city, but it's a start.
And so after everything that we've really discussed today, what are some major takeaways that you wish everybody would know?
The question about when to bring transportation providers into development discussions, I think, is important, right? The sooner the better is the takeaway there.
Right.
The understanding that new development, particularly greenfield development, has costs that then can often become unsustainable to communities, right? So like it may seem on paper to be cheaper to build that new distribution center or whatever, the new factory on the edge of town, but instead of cleaning up that brownfield in town, but there is, in the long term, it's going to be probably cheaper and longer and more sustainable to build within the city limits. The fact that where we're putting development, and if it is hard to access through any sort of transportation option except a private vehicle, means that you will always have employee turnover and struggle with employee retainment. Like that is some companies are now starting to factor that into like the cost of doing business and realizing like that is a huge cost. So I know I'm sort of rambling, but I think these are some takeaways that are real. And then also this question about, I guess the last one I would say is that emerging mobility solutions are important, but just being very thoughtful and cognizant that there are a lot of people who may not feel comfortable or can utilize the recent ones that have emerged. I think that is going to be an important point to hold on to as we continue to think about transportation and housing and vulnerable populations moving forward.
And so finally, if you could have everybody read one book, what would it be and why?
Yeah, so this is less about transportation per se, but I think Alan Malik's book, The Divided City, is a really important contribution to discussions about urban revitalization and city change that's going on across the country, but particularly in states like Ohio, where a few neighborhoods are really kind of coming roaring back and are putting pressure on long-term existing residents, but there are many, many more neighborhoods and census tracts in those cities that are continuing to decline, and that's worrisome, and that we need to really think about a full suite of solutions for all these communities.
Thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate the invitation.
And so to my listeners, please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorsteps podcast so that you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and this is Doorsteps.